This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, and here are the headlines from some of the stories we're following here today at NPR News. Sudan's government expelled 13 foreign aid groups from the Darfur region. The move comes a day after the International Criminal Court charged the country's president with war crimes. And Secretary of State Hillary Clinton called today for talks with Russia over issues on which the two countries disagree. She meets with her Russian counterpart tomorrow. And another tough day on Wall Street. Just a moment ago, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was down 322 points. This week, we began a series of conversations on the economic crisis where we ask economists, industrialists, business leaders a single question: how bad can this get? We started with Jeffrey Sachs, a professor of economics at Columbia, who was relatively optimistic.
Well, it's going to get worse, but it's not going to be a disaster in the end. We're going to have a very deep recession, but we're not going to have a depression. And we will pull out of this. And I believe, Neil, that we're going to pull out of it stronger than we were going into it.
Not just stronger, Sachs argued, but a fairer society if we use the crisis to address critical issues like energy. Well, today we'll hear from William Easterly, and we'd also like to hear from you. Do you see an end in sight? What for you will signal the start of the turnaround? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website at npr.org. Just click on Talk of the Nation. William Easterly is a professor of economics and co-director of the Development Research Institute at New York University. He's with us today from a studio at Brigham Young University in Utah, and it's nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Hi, Neil. How you doing?
I'm well, thank you. So how bad do you think this is going to get?
Well, Neil, to be honest, I'm really kind of scared because my focus is on the poor countries of the world, and I'm really afraid of what might happen. And let me explain. The Great Depression had a huge negative intellectual effect on the development of poor countries because it led to this approach of kind of state planning for development. It sort of discredited democratic capitalism, and I'm afraid that, you know, this very serious crisis could do exactly the same thing all over again, that it could lead poor countries that have been actually succeeding and growing using globalization and capitalism and democracy to kind of reject those models because they see those models as discredited now by the collapse.
And one place you write about where that has been discredited and people have voted to change it is in Latin America.
Yeah, in Latin America, there's been a huge backlash against the democratic capitalism model. People like Chavez are practically crowing with delight that the U.S. is collapsing economically at the moment. You know, he sees it as a vindication of his Bolivarian socialism approach to problems, which we know from tons of other evidence is going to be a disaster for Venezuela, but it's going to happen now there and in other countries like Bolivia and Nicaragua and Ecuador because they see the free market model as totally discredited now.
And your particular area of expertise is in Africa. This has not been an area where democratic capitalism has really taken much of a hold.
No. In fact, it was the area where the kind of the state planning model was the most successful for too many long decades. I still remember my first trip for the World Bank to Ghana in the 80s and just being shocked at how dilapidated Ghana was, where I had actually lived as a child and things had actually gotten a lot worse since I had last lived there. And there were just really insanely stupid things going on under these prevailing kind of anti-market ideas like, assembling automobiles as kind of an artificial state industry when the value of the final automobile was less than what they paid for the parts to assemble in Ghana. So they were actually losing money on every automobile, and yet this was, you know, supposed to be the mechanism for development in Ghana. And, you know, the consequence of that was Accra was a disaster zone. Since then, Ghana has embraced democratic capitalism, has benefited from participation in globalization. Now all of that could be reversed again. That's my big fear here.
You write about that progress and indeed the ability to make money and thrive and flourish comes from what you describe as the revolution from within. Describe that for us.
Yeah. Wherever we see really big successes in development, they tend to be really homegrown. and not the result of World Bank experts like I used to be flying in and giving deep advice after spending three nights in a luxury hotel room. You know, the homegrown reformers in China and India and South Korea and Taiwan and Singapore and Botswana and Chile, they just have you know, a huge track record of success, whereas all the kind of World Bank-directed, IMF-directed plans have really failed, unfortunately.
We're talking with William Easterly of New York University and asking how bad can it get. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. I think people are concerned about the situations in South America and Africa, Mr. Easterly, but nevertheless, they're principally looking right now at our own country. How bad do you think it's going to get before it starts to turn around?
Well, you know, this... This question is very important, not only for the U.S. economy, but also to address this intellectual debate. Does the U.S. current collapse really, does it really discredit our model? And the answer is no, which might seem like a surprising answer. But the reality is that capitalist economies do have periodic financial crises, and they recover from them. The U.S. has had steady, basically the same rate of trend economic growth since our independence 200 and some years ago, 2% per year average rise in living standards, which over that very long period of time has increased our standard of living by 35 times over since 1776. And after all the previous financial crises, including the Great Depression, we returned exactly to the same rate of trend growth. So, you know, our system has outperformed every other system in the long run, which is how you really judge the performance of a system, by far. You know, there's no other system that increases people's income by a factor of 35.
And those rough patches, you just have to ride them out.
Well, you know, you ride them out, and also there's kind of natural and not-so-natural self-correcting mechanisms. You know, that's one of the great virtues of both democracy and capitalism is that they're self-correcting systems. You know, the private financial people who made really stupid mistakes, they paid dearly for those mistakes. People are learning from those mistakes, and the same mistakes won't happen again anytime soon. We'll probably figure out some new mistakes to make.
Sure, we're inventive
people. 5 years
from
now. But, and the same with democracy. You know, there was some silly regulatory policies and other policies that led to the crisis, contributed to the crisis, and those are now being reversed and corrected. So, you know, democracy and capitalism, they're self-correcting. That's how we come back to the trend.
Let's get some callers in on the conversation. Let's start with Ian. Ian calling us from Cape Cod in Massachusetts.
Yes, I'd actually like to agree with your guest. I sort of feel that the turnaround has already happened. The awareness of the problem is the turnaround, and the only... I don't believe we'll see anything more visible, but I believe that people have sort of learned, as they did in the Depression, to get by with what they have and be more careful and prepare better. And I'll take comments off the air.
All right, thanks, Ian.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he's right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, I don't want to minimize the pain that people are feeling now, that my own family is feeling, or anyone else. You know, both the rich and the poor are feeling a lot of pain. I don't want to make light of that. But if we're deciding about what is our sort of best long-run system, then we have to stick with what has led us through rough times before, which is democratic capitalism.
Let's talk with Kelly. Kelly calling from Detroit.
Yeah, I'm actually in Hamtramck, Michigan right now, and I just drove by the the American Axle plant, and you talk about globalization as if it's a panacea of goodness, and I keep thinking that we had a protective tariff in this country since 1791 until basically 1980, and up until that time, we did rather well in manufacturing, and now that we have all this free trade globalization stuff, not so much anymore.
Well, I wasn't trying to say globalization is a panacea. There are no panaceas that lead to instant certain prosperity in the short run. You know, there's only systems that work on average very well in the long run. And globalization creates lots of disruptions like what you're talking about. You know, we have some industries that become uncompetitive, close down. And that's actually... in the long run healthy for the U.S. economy that it finds something even more productive to shift into. And I know I don't want to minimize the pain. I'm actually myself from a small town near Toledo, Ohio, which is about as rust belt and as collapsing industry as you want to get. And I see the pain myself every time I go home, and I feel that pain. But, you know, it would be much worse if we just sort of stuck with all the old industries as they became more and more uncompetitive. That would lead to a much lower standard of living. It would be sort of as if we decided to stick with typewriters because we didn't want to allow a movement into computers. You know, that's kind of what happens when you turn against globalization.
Kelly?
I understand that. I understand that argument. But the argument is that we had a protective tariff in this country for almost 150 years, 160 years. It was designed to protect our workers and our manufacturers against cheap, actually, at the time, British labor.
Yeah, I don't really agree with that story. There's, you know, protection is a very subtle thing to measure, and the U.S. has always been a relatively open economy and became much more open after the 19th century. So I think the U.S. has benefited itself enormously from trade and globalization.
Wasn't a tariff one of the principal reactions to the crash of 1929, the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act?
Yeah, that's the other fear I have, you know, is this tremendous backlash against globalization that could happen with a turn towards trade protectionism in every country, every rich and every poor country, which would be disastrous. We already see world trade contracting.
I would agree that a Smoot-Hawley tariff would be a disaster, but I don't think it's unreasonable to have a protective tariff, particularly when, say, one of our largest trading partners, I mean, obviously our first is Canada, but the second or third must be China. And they have, you know, for us to manufacture and import a car in there, they have a 20% tariff on our cars going in, and we have nothing on their manufactured goods coming in here.
All right, Kelly, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
We're continuing our series of conversations with economists and business leaders about, how bad is it going to get? Our guest today is William Easterly of New York University. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go to Robert. Robert with us from Tallahassee.
Hello, Neil.
Hi.
One of the things that I haven't really heard anybody talk too much about is looking at regulating the stock market. When you look what's happened in the last couple of days at the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the stock values just plummet, and, you know, the values of the Dow compared to, say, even 6 months ago has just gone down tremendously, whereas the actual real value of these companies haven't, and it's based on analysts say that things look really bad and therefore, you know, the market goes down. You look at airline stocks that used to be pretty predictable about how they would go up and down based on oil prices and demand, and, you know, oil goes down $5, airline stocks go up. You know, then they go down, you know, based on absolutely nothing. And, you know, I have money tied up in the stock market, and my account is worth half of what it used to be. The money has just vanished into thin air.
That is the situation that a lot of people are facing, William Easterly. And we're a long way from the plummets of the Depression still, but nevertheless, 12 years since it's been this low.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's enormously frightening. You know, I think what we have to remember is this was not just a regulatory failure and not just a private failure, that both private financial wizards and regulatory agencies made huge mistakes, and that's what created this disaster. You know, Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae were subsidizing home ownership by low-income owners. So there was a huge amount of mortgages to people who really could not really afford a home on conventional criteria. The financial wizards were disguising these risks in a really shameless way, which they got short-run gains from, but created huge losses for their firms. This was an enormous mistake by private sector people. So both private and public sectors are to blame here. The good news is that, you know, it's actually the fact that people make big mistakes is actually another argument for having markets, because markets punish these mistakes. And the punishment now is incredibly painful because the mistakes were extremely large. But it's better than the alternative when these mistakes would never have been corrected and just kept growing worse and worse and worse. So that's That's, you know, kind of the unpopular message I have to convey to you. The pain is enormous. I agree with you, but the alternative is worse.
Robert, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
You also, like a lot of other people, drew some comparisons to the Great Depression of the started in 1929 and ran through much of the 1930s. How long do you think this is going to last?
Well, you know, they say economists have predicted 10 of the last 3 recoveries. You know, it's I have learned from observing my fellow economists who are foolish enough to make predictions that you should never make predictions. Let's admit it. Economic science is not precise enough that we can make predictions. And the other scary thing is that nor does it give us a really exact blow-by-blow guideline on exactly what to do, how to get out of this mess. We're kind of feeling our way by trial and error right now.
And if you were going to point to signs that to you would say, aha, that might be good, that's solid information, that's something that could point to the beginning of a turnaround, what might those indicators be?
Well, you know, I'll go back first to the issue that I was talking about at the beginning, you know, the effect on the poor countries. You know, if the poor countries really start coming back home to the democratic capitalism and globalization that has been helping them until this crisis escape poverty, we've actually had one of the biggest escapes from poverty in human history in the last 25 years. Then that would be a really welcome indicator. And for the domestic economy, I think the stock market is the obvious indicator, you know, that you have to convince financial markets that we are correcting the problems.
William Easterly, thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you.
William Easterly teaches economics and serves as co-director of the Development Research Institute at New York University. He joins us today from a studio in Utah. Tomorrow at Science Friday, Ira Flatow will be here for a conversation with anthropologist Donald Johanson, the man who discovered our ancestor, Lucy, plus new images of the oldest fossil brain. Ira Flatow will have all that for you tomorrow. I'll talk to you again on Monday. Have a great weekend, everybody. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.